Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the middle, or we've covered the first part of the Massachusetts ratification debate. Kind of gave you an overview of how it was going down and how things were happening. And in our very last reading, we kind of went through what I would say is kind of an outlandish opposition to the design of the Senate, because you got to remember, up in Massachusetts, they wanted annual elections. They wanted to be able to get rid of somebody very quickly. And so they felt that, you know, if you had a representative that served more than a year, then you opened the door to tyranny just like that. So, anyway, and this, you can see how the different views of the people in different states actually look at things really differently. Today, we kind of melted down certain things, and other things have not melted at all into, you know, across the blue and red lines and so forth. Anyway, as you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this really is the only show that gives you this type of evidence and data. I may not be the best presenter. I may not be the best reader in reading some of this archaic language and terminology and so forth, but I'm doing everything I can to empower you with the necessary knowledge so that you can stand up with confidence in knowing what the federal government is doing is an outright violation of the Constitution. And in so doing, you can become the champion in your state and in your community to start demanding compliance and that your state legislatures do their doggone job in protecting us from all of this federal tyranny. In reeling these guys in, there's no doubt in my mind, if Biden and all of Obama and the rest of these, Clinton even, going back to Bill Clinton, if we finally tried these guys for treason with the facts that we already have, like Clinton giving away the Loral secrets to China to allow them to target us, to actually kill us with ICBMs, are you kidding me? That was treason. And all of these men and women would be dancing at the end of a rope, if you know what I mean. Anyway, we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. And so what we want to do is, you know, we want to throw that out there and entice you. I understand we're getting into very specific content, and it's hard to talk. We're not focused at all right now on the marketing. All this great marketing that Biden and his associates are giving us, all of these unconstitutional, illegal, evil players, all the things that they're doing and giving us, we want to focus right now on exactly how the Constitution was defined. This way we can move forward with far more direction, more deliberate and decisive in what we must do. Because once we become very succinct and concise and you start demanding that your state legislatures do their cotton-picking job, then they will start getting the message. And this is how we get it done, especially in these dark red states. And, oh, by the way, if you live in a blue state, don't worry. Start supporting us in these dark red states. Reach out and contact these people and say, hey, how come you're not getting on board with this? Anyway, as you know, we're in the throes of Massachusetts, so let me just kind of pick up where we left off. Now, as I was just saying, there was this complaint being done by Mr. Pierce, and then Colonel Barnum basically did a follow-up. So what I've actually got here, even though this may have been an anti-federalist comment, I'm going to go back and forth because this is one comment, then it goes into another comment by another person, and then it goes into another comment by another person, just so you can see how the dialogue was exchanging as this debate was basically, you know, running rickshaw through the cotton-picking capital there, or I should say through the convention for ratification. And so Colonel Varnum basically said this: in answer to an inquiry why a Bill of Rights was not annexed to this Constitution, said that by the Constitution of Massachusetts, the legislature have a right to make all laws not repugnant to the Constitution. Now, said he, if there be such a clause in the Constitution under consideration, then there would be necessity for a Bill of Rights. In the section under debate, Congress have an express power to levy taxes, etc., and pass laws to carry the requisitions into execution. This, he said, was express and required no Bill of Rights. After stating the difference between delegated powers and the grant of all power, general powers in other words, except in certain cases, the colonel proceeded to controvert the idea that this Constitution went to a consolidation of the Union. He said it was only a consolidation of strength and that it was apparent Congress had no right to alter the internal relations of the state. The design in amending the Confederation, he said, was to remedy its defects. It was the interest of the whole to confederate against a foreign enemy at which was to be bound to exert its utmost ability to oppose the enemy. But it had been done at our expense in great measure, and that there was no way to provide for a remedy because Congress had the power to call forth the resources of every state, nor to coerce delinquent states, but under the proposed government, those states which will not comply with equal requisitions will be coerced. And this, he said, is a glorious provision. In the late war, said the colonel, the states of New Hampshire and Massachusetts for 2 or 3 years had in the field half the Continental Army under General Washington. Who paid those troops? The states which raised them were called on to pay them. How, unless Congress have a power to levy taxes, can they make the states pay their proportion? In order that this and some other states may not again be obliged to pay 8 or 10 times their proportion of the public exigencies, he said, this power is highly necessary to be delegated to the federal head. He showed the necessity of Congress being enabled to prepare against the attacks of foreign enemy, and he called upon the gentleman from Andover, Mr. Symes, or any other gentleman, to produce an instance where any government consisting of 3 branches elected by the people and having checks on each other, as this has abused the power to be, or as this has abused the power delegated to them. Now, Mr. Choate Mr. Choate said that this clause gives power to Congress to levy duties, excise, imposts, and etc., considering the trust delegated to Congress. Because, and I just want you to know that this is literally the following statement. Now, this guy gets up, Mr. Choate, and starts saying this. Delegated to Congress, that they are to, quote, provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare, etc. If this is to be the object of their delegation, the next question is whether they shall not be vested with powers to prosecute it. And this can be no further than unlimited power of taxation, if that defense requires it. Mr. Choate contended that it was the power of the people concentrated to a point that, as all power is lodged in them, this power ought to be supreme. He showed the necessity of its being so, not only for the common defense, but for our advantage in settling commercial treaties. Do we wish to make a treaty with any nation of Europe? We are told we have no stability as a nation. As Congress must provide for the common defense, they asked Mr. Choate to be confined for the imposts and excise. They are alone judges whether 5 or 1% is necessary or convenient. It has been the practice of all nations to anticipate their resources by loans. This will be the case of the United States in war. He then asked that the resources are competent and well established, and that no doubt remained of them, whether in that case the individuals who have property will not cheerfully offer it for the general defense. After averting to the idea of some of its being a consolidation of the union, Mr. Choa concluded by a brief display of the several checks contained and securities for the people to be found in this system. Now, General Thompson gets up, and General Thompson basically says, "Sir, the question is whether Congress shall have power. Some say that if this section was left out, the whole would fall to the ground, and I think so too, as it is all of a piece. We are now fixing a national consolidation. This section, I look upon it, is big with mischiefs. Congress will have power to keep standing armies. The great Mr. Pitt says standing armies are dangerous. Keep your militia in order. We don't want standing armies." A gentleman said, "We are a rich state." "I say so too. Then why shall we not want 5 or 6 months and see what our sister states do? We are able to stand our ground against a foreign power. They cannot starve us out, and they cannot bring their ships on the land. We are a nation of healthy, strong men. Our land is fertile, and we are increasing in numbers. It is said we owe money. No matter if we do, our safety lies in not paying it. Pay only the interest. Don't let us move too fast." So in other words, here's the general that's basically coming up and arguing against the Constitution and saying that, you know, they need to basically stand their ground as a sovereign state. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so kind of moving forward, because as we just kind of covered the general's comments, and I could go on, but he was basically taking the position, hey, let's not ratify this. You know, let's sit back. We've got 6 months. Let us be the mediators. Let us look at, you know, not doing anything right now because we're healthy. We're strong. You know, and he completely forgets the fact that the Shea Rebellion just occurred because people were unable to pay their debts. And there was, you know, Massachusetts had its share of the blame. And as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, it was the New England states that couldn't actually pay their debts. And it was Hamilton with the Assumption Act in basically covering for those states that were unable to pay their debt, which basically then shifted the burden to all the states to pay for those states who did nothing. It's almost like, you know, paying for or forgiving these student loans. Anyway, it defies logic. You are obligated to pay something. You have to pay that at the value that it was required. Anyway, so moving down the path here, Mr. Baldwin, the Honorable Mr. Baldwin, then kind of comes forward in response to some of these outlandish positions, and he says, it will be, and has been said, this great power may be abused, and instead of protecting, may be employed by Congress in oppressing their constituents. A possibility of abuse, as it may be affirmed, of all delegated power, whether it is by itself no sufficient reason for withholding the delegation. If it were a significant one, no power could be delegated, nor could government of any sort subsist. The possibility, however, should make us careful that in all delegations of importance, like the one contained in the proposed Constitution, there should be such checks provided as would not frustrate the end and intention of the delegating of power, but would, as far as be safely done, prevent the abuse of it, and such checks are provided in the Constitution. Some of them were mentioned the last evening by one of my worthy colleagues, but I shall exhibit all of them in one view. The two capital departments of government, the legislative and executive, in which the delegated power resides, consisting the President, Vice President, Senate, and the Representatives, are directly by the respective legislatures and delegates chosen by the people. The President and also the Vice President, when acting as President before they enter on the execution of offices, shall solemnly swear or affirm that they will faithfully execute the office of the President and will, to the best of their abilities, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. The senators and representatives before mentioned and members of the state legislatures and all executive judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by an oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. The President and the Vice President and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes or misdemeanors. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office which shall have been created, or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during this continuance in office. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States or any particular state, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under the United States shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of the present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and domestic violence. To these great checks may be added several other very essential ones, as the negative which each house was, which has upon the acts of the other, and disapproving power of the President, which subjects those acts to a revision by two houses, and a final negative unless two-thirds of each house shall agree to pass the returned acts. Notwithstanding the President's objections, the printing and the journals of each house containing their joint and respective proceedings, and the publishing from time to time a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures of all public money, none of which shall be drawn from the Treasury but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and those laws shall be in pursuant to the enumerated powers of the Constitution. I just added that. Okay, it ended with appropriations made by law. And then I added, and all those laws must be in pursuant to the Constitution and only to the enumerated powers within the Constitution. In other words, they just can't make up a law like the Civil Rights Act and say, now we're going to ram these laws down your throat for housing and for labor. They can't do it. They've been making it up as they get along. Anyway, he goes on and says, all these checks and precautions provided in the Constitution must, in a great measure, prevent an abuse of power, at least in all flagrant instances, even if Congress should consist wholly of men who were guided by no other principle than their own interest. Under the influence of such men who were guided by no other principle than Under the influence of such checks, this would compel them to a conduct which, in general, would answer the intention of the Constitution. But the presumption is, and if the people duly attend the objects of their choice, it would be realized that the President of the United States and the members of Congress would, for the most part, be men not only of ability, but of good moral character, in which case an abuse of power is not to be apprehended, nor error in the government, but such as every human institution is subject to. Now, he goes on, but what I want to cover is this next part. With regards to rights, the whole Constitution is a declaration of rights, which primarily and principally respect the general government intended to be formed by it, the rights of particular states or private citizens not being the object or subject of the Constitution. They are only incidental mentioned. In regard to the former, it would require a volume to describe them as they extended to every subject of legislation not included in the powers vested in Congress. And in regard to the latter, as all governments are founded on the relinquishment of personal rights, in a certain degree, there was a clear impropriety in being very particular about them. By such a particularity, the government might be embarrassed and prevent from doing what the private as well as the public and general good of citizens and states might require. The public good, in which private is necessarily involved, might be hurt by too particular an enumeration, and the private good could suffer no injury from a deficit enumeration, because Congress could not injure the rights of the private citizens without injuring their own, as they must in their public as well as their private character participate equally with others in the consequences of their own acts. Now, what I want to do is I want to just repeat what I just said, because you missed it. What he just basically asserted was, if Congress is to make a law, then they must participate equally in this law. So I'm going to do it again. The public good, in which private is necessarily involved, might be hurt by too particular an enumeration, and the private good could suffer no injury from a deficient enumeration, because Congress could not injure the rights of private citizens without injuring their own, as they must in their public as well as private character participate equally with others in the consequences of their acts. And by this most important circumstance, in conjunction with the checks above mentioned, the several states at large and each citizen in particular will be secured as far as human wisdom can secure them against the abuse of the delegated power. What you need to take away from this one little part is that they just defined Congress, that Congress could not immune themselves from any laws that they placed upon the people in private and public, that they too must suffer equally with the consequences of their own acts. Do you understand? Congress can't have their own private retirement system. It was defined here that if they were to create via an amendment, whatever they created as constitutional within pursuance. In other words, put aside the fact that Social Security is unconstitutional. Let's say that we amended the Constitution and gave the federal government the ability to have power over maintaining a retirement system. Congress, in that retirement system and whatever they propose for the public and the private good, they too must be a part equally in participating in that system. They cannot have, they cannot indemnify themselves. They cannot protect themselves from the consequences of their bad laws, that they too equally must suffer and be oppressed as they oppress others. Okay? So anyway, as we, let me take a look here. I've got less than half a minute. And so, well, not even that. I misread. Now we're heading into a quick two promos, so we'll be right back, and we'll be back with Mr. Dawes speaking about armies, peacetime, and all sorts of good things right after these two promos. So be right back after this. Thank you so much.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's dive into this next set of comments. Actually, this is going to be one comment, and then we'll get into actually a slew of comments that go back and forth. You know, a really short comment here by somebody, short comment back and forth, as a really good debate. Anyway, as Mr. Dawes observed, upon the authority of Congress to raise and support armies, that all the objections which have been made by gentlemen against standing armies were inapplicable to the present question, which was that as there must be an authority somewhere to raise and support armies, whether that authority ought to be in Congress. As Congress are the legislature upon the proposed plan of government, in them only, said he, should be lodged the power under debate. Some gentlemen seem to have confused ideas about standing armies, that the legislature of the country should not have power to raise armies is a doctrine, he said, never heard before. Charles II in England kept in pay an army of 5,000 men, and James II augmented them to 30,000. This occasioned a great and just alarm through the nation, and accordingly, when William III came to the throne, it was declared unconstitutional to raise or keep a standing army in the time of peace without the consent of the legislature. Most of our own state constitutions have borrowed this language from the English Declaration of Rights, but none of them restrain their legislatures from raising and supporting armies. Those who never objected to such an authority in Congress are as vested by the old Confederation surely ought not to object to such a power in Congress, where there is to be a new branch of representation arising immediately from the people, because Continental Congress was representatives of the state. In other words, the states created a puppet government, and then they started making themselves fat, lazy, and rich. Anyway, where there is to be a new branch of representation arising immediately from the people, and which branch alone must originate from very grants that are to maintain an army. When we consider that this branch is to be elected every 2 years, there is a great propriety in its being restrained from making any grants to support of the army for longer spaces than that of their existence. If the election of this popular branch were for 7 years, as in England, the men who would make the first grant might also be the second and third for the continuance of the army, and such an acquaintance might exist between the representatives in Congress and the leaders of the army as might be unfavorable to liberty. But when the wisdom of the late convention has avoided this difficulty, the army must expire of itself in 2 years after it shall be raised, unless renewed by representatives who at the time will have just come fresh from the body of the people. It will share the same fate as that of a temporary law which dies at the time of mentioned in the act itself, unless revived by some future legislature. Now we're going to get into this little going back and forth. And it starts off with Dr. Taylor. He basically asked why there was not to be a federal town over which Congress is to exercise exclusive legislation. Mr. Strong responded, said, every gentleman must think that the erection of a federal town was necessary wherein Congress might remain protected from insult. A few years ago, said the honorable gentleman, Congress had to remove because they were not protected by the authority of the state in which they were sitting. He asked whether this convention, though convened but for a short period, did not think it was necessary that they should have power to protect themselves from insult. Much more so must they think it necessary to provide for Congress, considering they are to be a permanent body. Mr. Davis said it was necessary that Congress should have a permanent resident, and that it was the intention of Congress under the Confederation to erect a federal town. He asked, would Massachusetts or any other state wish to give to New York or the state of in which Congress shall sit the power to influence the proceedings of that body, which was to act for the benefit of the whole by leaving them liable to the outrage of the citizens of such states? Dr. Taylor asked, why it need be 10 miles square, and whether 1 mile square would not be sufficient. Mr. Strong replied and said, Congress was not to exercise jurisdiction over a district of 10 miles, but one not exceeding 10 miles square. In other words, it could be less. It didn't require a 10 nautical mile square. Mr. Reverend Stillman said that whatever the limits of the district, it would depend on the secession of the legislature of one of the states or more. Mr. Dench said that he wished further light on the subject, but that from the words, we the people, in the first clause ordaining this constitution, he thought it was an actual consolidation of the states. So now he's going back to, you know, an older argument, and that if he was not mistaken, the moment it took place, a dissolution of the state governments was also to take place. In other words, going really out there into left field, right? Now General Brooks basically comes up and rose and said, to consider the idea suggested by the gentleman last speaking, that this constitution would produce a dissolution of the state governments or a consolidation of the whole, which in his opinion, he said, was ill-founded, or rather a loose idea. In the first place, says he, the Congress under this Constitution cannot be organized without repeated acts of the legislature of the several states. And therefore, if the creating power is dissolved, the body be created not again, cannot exist. In the second place, because if you understand, the Senate cannot be recreated if all of a sudden the state legislatures, who can't appoint the Senate anymore, it basically dies. It is impossible the general government can exist unless the governments of the several states are forever existing, as the qualifications of the electors for the federal representation are to be the same as those of the electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. It was therefore, he said, impossible that the state governments should be annihilated by the general government. And it was, he said, strongly implied from that part of the section under the date which Congress power to exercise exclusive jurisdiction over the federal town, that they shall have it over no other place. Get that? They only have the control over this particular town, but no other place. When we attend to the Constitution, we shall see, says the general, that the powers to be given to Congress amount only to a consolidation of the strength of the Union, and that private rights are not consolidated. The general mentioned that the rights, while Congress could not infringe upon, and said that their power to define what was treason was much less than is vested in the legislature of the state by our own Constitution, as it was confined in the third section of the Article 3rd to levying war or adhering to and confronting our enemies. Only he mentioned the restraint upon Congress and the punishment of treason, and compared it with the extended powers lodged in the Parliament of Great Britain or like crimes, and concluded observing that as the United States guaranteed to each state a republican form of government, the state governments were effectually secured as long as though the Constitution could never be enforced. Anyway, Mr. Rufus King said in reply to the inquiry respecting a federal town that there was no place for Congress to reside in, and that it was necessary that they should have a permanent residence, were to establish proper archives in which they were to make their deposits, treaties, papers, and such deeds of secession and so forth. Finally, and this is the last comment out of this little barrage going back and forth that I'm going to read for you, this from Mr. Singletary. Mr. Singletary said that all gentlemen had said about a Bill of Rights to the Constitution was that what is written is written. But he thought we were giving up all power, and that the states will be like towns in this state. Towns, he said, have a right to lay taxes, to raise money, and the states possibly may have the same. We have now, said he, a good Republican Constitution, and we do not want it guaranteed to us. He did not understand what gentlemen meant by Congress guaranteeing a Republican form of government. He wished they could not play with the subject while they find excuse me, and some of this language is really hard to read. Anyway, he wished they would not play around. I say around, but it's actually round. He wished they would not play round the subject with their fine stories, like a fox round a trap, but come to it. Why, they don't say that Congress will guarantee our state constitution. So anyway, there you go. So we kind of left that there. And now Mr. Jarvis is going to broach the concept and the context of religion. And this is Monday, January 28th. So we're really wrapping up and we're heading into the end of the Massachusetts debates. Then there's quite a few notes that we still have to cover. But in this particular case, in the conversation on Thursday, on the sixth article, which provides that, quote, no religious test shall be ever required as a qualification to any office. This is interesting because this is one of the few states that really get into this debate and argument. And so we will wrap this up when we come back after these two promos. So please stay tuned. We just got a little bit more. Hopefully we'll get through most of the Massachusetts debate and wrap it up in our next episode. We will see. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me kind of pick this up from where we left off. In the conversation on Thursday on the sixth article, which provides that, quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office, close quote, etc., several gentlemen urged that it was a departure from the principles of our forefathers who came here for the preservation of their religion, and that it would admit deists and atheists and etc. into the general government, and people being apt to imitate the examples of the court, these principles would be disseminated, and of course a corruption of morals ensue. Gentlemen on the other side applaud the liberality of the clause and represented in striking colors the impropriety and almost impiety of the requisition of a test. And as practiced in Great Britain and elsewhere, in this conversation, the following is the substance of the observations of the test. And so, anyway, this goes now to Reverend Shute. Mr. President, to object to the latter part of the paragraph under consideration, which excludes religious tests, is, I am sensible, very popular for the most of men, somehow are rigidly tenacious of their own sentiments in religion and disposed to impose them upon others as the standard of truth. If in my sentiments, this is the same thing with secularism and godlessness, my friends. If you listen to and you look at how, you know, the homosexual movement and all of these other religions that are godless religions, of secular religion, Mohammedans and so forth, that these other religions are intolerant and believe in compulsion and that you must follow their faith. Anyway, let me keep moving on here. I am sensible, very popular for the most men, somehow are rigidly tenacious in their own sentiments in religion and disposed to impose them upon others as the standard of truth. And that's why I said this, that secularism is exactly, or godlessness is one of those very much that is being imposed. It all started off in the 1800s of, you know, just tolerate us. Can't you just tolerate somebody being different? And as soon as they have a majority, then all of a sudden it's no longer tolerate. Either you accept and follow us or we will crush you. In other words, intolerance goes out the window. If in my sentiments upon the point in view, I should differ from some in this honorable body, I only wish from them the exercise of that candor with which true religion adapted to inspire the honest and well-dispositioned mind. To establish a religious test as a qualification for offices in the proposed federal constitution, it appears to me, sir, would be attended with injurious consequence to some individuals and with advantage to the whole. By the injurious consequences to individuals, I mean that some who in other respect are qualified to fill some important posts in government will be excluded by their not being able to stand the religious test, which I take to be a privation of part of their civil rights. Nor is there to me any conceivable advantage, sir, that would result in the whole from such a test. Unprincipled and dishonest men will not hesitate to subscribe to anything that may open the way for their advancement and put them into a situation the better to execute their base and iniquitous designs. Honest men alone, therefore, however well qualified to serve the public, would be excluded by it, and their country be deprived by the benefit of their abilities. In this great and extensive empire, there is and will be a great variety of sentiments and religion among its inhabitants. Upon the plan of religious tests, the question, I think, must be, who shall be excluded from national trusts? Whatever answer bigotry may suggest, the dictates of candor and equity, I conceive, will be none. Because bottom line, you comply to the Constitution, you support the Constitution, that's what you have to do. And if you don't do that, you're gone. They can't invoke Mohammedans. What these people are doing is a direct violation of the Constitution. All of these people, AOC, Ilhan, all of these people in office today that are godless or Mohammedans or seculars or what have you, they are all violating the Constitution by forcing very specific doctrines and so forth to be adhered to and attacking your rights and your privileges and your beliefs. Anyway, moving on, he says, far from limiting my charity and confidence to men of my own denomination and religion, I suppose and I believe, sir, that there are worthy characters among men of every denomination, among the Quakers, the Baptists, the Church of England, the Papist, and even among those who have no other guide in the way to virtue in heaven than the dictates of natural religion. I must therefore think, sir, that the proposed plan of government in this particular is wisely constructed, that as I have an equal claim to the blessing of the government under which they live and which they support, so none should be excluded from them for being any particular denomination and religion. The presumption is, and how many times do you hear people? I mean, look at the 2012 election and how many million evangelicals, millions, 11, 16? That was a lot, that refused to vote for Romney because he was a Mormon. So they allowed the Mohammedan, the hybrid Christian Mohammedan Obama get reelected. Are you kidding me? Anyway. The presumption is that the eyes of the people will be upon the faithful in the land, and from a regard to their own safety, they will choose for their own rulers men of known abilities, of known probity, of good moral characters. The Apostle Peter tells us that God is no respecter of persons, but in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is acceptable to him. And I know of no reason why men of such character in a community of whatever denomination, religion, ceteris paribus, with some Latin terms, with other suitable qualifications, should not be acceptable to the people, and why they may not be employed by them with safety and advantage in the important offices of government. The exclusion of a religious test in the proposed Constitution, therefore, clearly appears to me to be in favor of its adoption. And so there you go. We kind of answered that question. Now they kind of go back into this. And this is by Reverend Mr. Payson, and this is what he says regarding religion. The great object of religion being God supreme, and the seat of religion in man being the heart of conscience. The reason God has given us employed on our moral actions in their most important consequence is related to the tribunal of God. Hence, I infer that God alone is the God of the conscience, and consequently attempts to erect human tribunals for the consciousness of men are impious encroachments upon the prerogatives of God. Upon these principles, had there been a religious test as qualification for office, it would be, in my opinion, have been a great blemish upon the instrument itself. Now, Mr. Heat follows up with this comment. Mr. President, after a long and painful investigation of the Federal Constitution by paragraphs, this honorable convention are drawing nigh to the ultimate question, a question as momentous as ever invited the attention of man. We are soon to decide on a system of government digested not only for the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts only, not for the present people of the United States only, but in addition to these, for all those states which may hereafter rise into existence within the jurisdiction of the United States, and for the millions of people yet born, a system of government not for a nation of slaves, but for a people as free and virtuous as any on earth. For a conquered nation subdued to our will, but for a people who have fought, who have bled, and who have conquered, who, under the smiles of heaven, have established their independence and sovereignty and have taken equal rank among the nations of earth. In short, sir, it is a system of government for ourselves and for our children, for all that is near and dear to us in life, and on the decision of questions is suspended our political prosperity or infelicity, perhaps our existence as a nation. What can be more solemn? What can be more interesting? Everything depends on our union. I know that some have supposed that although the Union should be broken, particular states may retain their importance, but this cannot be. The strongest nerve state, even the right arm, if separated from the body, must wither. If the great Union be broken, our country as a nation perishes, and if our country so perishes, it will be as impossible to save as a particular state to preserve one of the fingers of a mortified hand. Wow. Okay, so we're kind of in these summations and some of these final arguments, but as you can see, you know, they were covering issues and matters that are not covered in many of the other states. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and we will be back with more of the Massachusetts debates in our next episode.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.